Hello, and welcome back to Literally Literary. If this is your first time joining us, be sure to check out our previous episodes. This episode, we are continuing our discussion on Alessandra Narváez Valera's debut, 30 Talks Weird Love. In this episode, we will focus on discussing some of our favorite pieces and ways to teach the novel.
Great job.
Thank you. Awesome. Hi, guys. Nice to see you all again.
Nice.
How's everything going? How are you, Richie? How are you feeling?
Excellent. Last week, I was much more sick. I think my voice sounds a little bit normal now. And I'm ready to move back on with life. Yeah, I'm feeling great. Good. How are you feeling?
Good. Good, good, good. Yep. You, Vanessa?
Me too. Good.
Ready to talk about this book?
Yeah.
Yep. Talk some weird love.
Oh, speaking of that weird love, right? You know, we got all our snacks, our snacky snacks in front of us. It's worth mentioning.
It is worth mentioning. We just posted on our stories on Instagram to let everyone know what we're snacking on during this episode. And hopefully we'll get some sponsors. Mm-hmm. Maybe not, you know, Barcel or what was the other one? Bimbo. But maybe some local somebody. Sponsors. Someone will sponsor us.
Right on.
So last episode, we kind of went over just our impressions, first impressions of the novel. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about some of the other local writers and how Alessandra fits in that now. Even though she's new-ish. Mm-hmm. I think she'll be around for a while after reading this. Now we've concluded reading the book and we have a lot to say about it. So hopefully we'll do it justice in today's episode. Where do we want to start?
What do you think, Vanessa? The beginning?
Start at the beginning.
Well, we did talk about it in part one. So, I mean, the premise, a little bit of what's going on. We did go into some of the major themes, but now I guess now we can dive into the text. So, I don't know what you guys have.
I have a few that I want to talk about. And then I want to also at some point kind of go back to part one where we discussed the different genres that that Al is using in this book and the heavy topics that she develops throughout, some of which we've already discussed, like the femicides, mental health, things like that. Mm-hmm. And then maybe we can also talk about the progression of the relationship between Ana Maria and 30.
Wait, is your book signed?
It is signed.
Oh, that's awesome.
I got this one at Literarity. Yes. Nice. I know. I was going to have her sign it, but maybe she can write a little note.
She can double sign it.
Double sign.
Not too many people have those.
I have my black lens.
It's double signed?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay. Like I said, not many, but.
Yeah, I know.
Some Vanessa, of course.
Vanessa is definitely more than that.
Not your average.
Cool. Yeah, no, there's a lot to talk about, right? Themes and then even like forms. I agree. Mm-hmm. Does anyone have the opening at all? Or? I just want to point out, I love the, you know, a good intro, a good opening. So even the way she sets it up with the title, leading into the text, because as we mentioned previously, this is a lot of poetry, right? Poetry prose that forms a narrative, and it does so in such interesting ways. But even though in the opening, I like the tie-in from the title into the text, right? I wasn't looking for her. She found me. Thought that was a nice transition, right? And of course, we don't know at the beginning that this is, she's talking about 30. Mm-hmm. It was right into the confrontation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But of course, because of the climate, you know, fear, femicide, her reaction is to run away at first. So.
Mm-hmm.
We get some world building.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of exposition in these first few poems. Mm-hmm. Establishes her age, the year 1999, the place, Juarez, the state of danger we get from the get-go.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Her school, we learn about SOR 101.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about that last time too, and how SOR is one of those prestigious schools, and it really weighed heavily on her because of the pressure of doing well in school and her wanting to just be the best and be on the honor roll. And so that's something that's consistent throughout, mm-hmm. up until like towards the end, I would say.
Yeah.
Where it gets, she's starting to realize that other things are more important. Mm-hmm. So then we see her kind of, I don't know if acting out is the best way to say it, but stuff happens towards the end of the book, which we'll get to.
Yeah. Behavioral changes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So we do definitely see a lot of that. It's almost like another character, the school, because it's just how much we know about it and it's like present, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, it's crazy that at 13, there's already so much pressure from school and to even feel like you already need to know what you're going to do in life. Mm-hmm. Because one of the big things about meeting 30 is finding out that she doesn't end up becoming a doctor like she wanted.
Yeah.
But rather a poet and a teacher, right? Mm-hmm. And then it's kind of a little bit of that. Trying to figure out what happens, you know, why does that happen? And mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's kind of one of the thread we follow throughout the book.
Did you all have an idea of what you wanted to be when you were 13? Did that change?
Hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I think I went through like 10 different careers in my childhood. And I was like, I want to be a marine biologist and I want to be a nurse and mm-hmm. I want to be this and that and like completely mm-hmm. different from what I'm doing now.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of different.
We talked about this last time, like mm-hmm. An astronaut. Like all kids want to be astronauts. Mm. How many of them actually go on to be astronauts? Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't remember what you wanted to be, Vanessa?
At 13?
Mm-hmm. I know. Mine were like from younger age. At 13, I can't remember what I wanted to be.
Mm. I want to say I wanted to get into music. So I think I was in choir at the time. So I wanted to go to like Juilliard. That was like my dream. Mm-hmm.
Practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That reminds me. In high school, I wanted to be like a band director. So that was another career.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's crazy. What I wanted to do, yeah. It's kind of hard to remember. Like, I did like the prospect of like working with NASA and just learning more about the universe and how it works. Like, I thought astrophysics were pretty cool. Mm-hmm. But, you know, things change. You know, I don't like math that much.
Yeah. Oh, man, there's math involved. But,
exactly.
You know, I obviously love the arts a lot as well. So, you know, any of those things as well. Imagine, you know, becoming a musician and traveling to play and stuff. And those things are nice. Mm-hmm. But you can't predict the future. But I mean, that's such a huge thing, right? Like trying to feel like you have to have it figured out at such a young age.
Yeah, it's kind of unfair. I mean, it's nice to have some sense of direction, but it's also like, what do you know at that age? And you're not the same person you were at 13, right?
It's changing, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of one of the things that 30 tries to tell her, you know, tries to show her and teach her. But Ana Maria's like, whatever, you don't know me. Who are you? I'm you from the future.
And such a teenager voice too all throughout.
Yeah. Just see the eye rolls and
yeah,
just imagine all of that. It's really great.
Yeah. I mentioned it prior to the show, but, you know, 30 is trying to talk this love to her and persuader, you know, you're more than your work, which is such a, we hear that a lot nowadays because we, a lot of critiques of work, capitalism under, you know, like, and I just love this 13-year-old's response to 30, right? You're more than your work. She's like, yeah, you probably have corny poetry. That, like, that's, that was a nice little funny moment there.
I like that idea. Yeah. You're more than your job or what you do for a living. That's not your whole identity.
Yeah.
My therapist tells me that all the time. Shout out to therapy. I definitely really like that, really related to that. Did you all have any poems specific to the first section that you wanted to look at?
Let's see.
My first one is on page 26, which I just passed.
Oh, found, yeah.
Yeah.
Not before.
So we did talk a little bit about this last time. This poem, Found Newspaper Memories. Just how much of a, it's not really a departure because as Richie mentioned earlier, from that first poem, we already get like, this sense of danger and like establishing what Juarez is, you know, or could be, has been. And so this one is, it's more specific. And now we're starting to picture like the newspaper, the headlines, the girls. But what I really liked about this poem was that attention to the word found, right? When you think found, oh, they found the girl, like that's a joyous occasion, right? But it's never that. It's always because the girls are found. In what state are they found, right? So I like the poem because it's not trying to like sugarcoat anything. It's really dark. It's very visual and visceral, and there's a lot of really great imagery in it. And then there's a lot of that, which I'm sure we'll get to later, of the, you know, dialogue or memories of what her parents are telling her, kind of in there as well, like telling her, we'll protect you, but she has this sense of, you know, there's imminent danger because I'm a girl too, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I like this poem for those reasons.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we can revisit that because there's definitely those lines that I think, and it's just that thing of wanting to protect your child, and you know, and but there is the reality, and it's kind of one of the things that's built up too is having to experience that for the first time. Yeah.
I also like that she touches that it's not only just girls, like so it doesn't just stop like when she gets older, like women.
Women, yeah.
As well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My poem was on 32. I don't know if you had one before that.
Mm-mm.
So I like that this poem, What Loving You Could Be. So again, 30 challenges her, right? Mm-hmm. Love you. And it's such a weird, it's unheard of to her, right? The fact, so it's to her, that's what makes it a weird love. So I think, you know, I like this one because it's her contemplating what that means. And it's coming from you know, a student. I like the way she incorporates like school studies in a lot of her her thoughts, right? Because earlier she uses some mathematics to write some poetry, which is pretty cool too. Regardless of what I said earlier about not liking math, I thought that was a pretty neat interjection. But here she's talking kind of more about the scientific method, right? Creating a hypothesis. And it just kind of revolves into around, well, what does that mean? Standing in front of a mirror and like feeling good about yourself, like giving yourself a high five, like noticing all your features. And I like the way it just comes to her kind of coming to the back of her head, which is such a unique space, right? But realizing that, you know, I love the back of my head, what I think is great. And I just love the conclusion that loving you could mean loving at least one part of your body. And I think that's a really significant start to that kind of self-love because, I mean, this is all image-based, but a lot of sometimes what we get in our heads about is image-based, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I just thought it was a nice section of her self-introspection and starting to think about 30's challenge there to love you.
Yeah. I really like that too, like how she's using that scientific lens because it's what she knows, right? And it's what she's constantly thinking about school and how it is that she learns things and can break them down, right? And later on, you know, she starts using poetry to kind of define these feelings and because that's something new to her and she's starting to learn that from 30 and from her own life and stuff. So that's pretty cool. That's a nice little progression that we see throughout the book.
Yeah. I mean, I like that the next poem after that is What Loving You Is Not. And she talks about this melodramatic movie that she was watching with her mom. Mm-hmm. And then she just has like the sniffles. I was like, don't cry. It's kind of like, she's like, is that what love is? Nah.
And then, yeah, so this is one of the things like pre-show I was saying, ooh, I just realized something. Because on page 180 at the end of the book, she has a poem, What Loving You Is. So these first two poems, What Loving You Could Be, What Loving You Is Not, and then later, What Loving You Is. Mm-hmm. So she's finally come to that, you know, resolution or conclusion, which I thought was really cool. And this one you can totally see, like, it's written in couplets and, you know, you can see the poetry just flowing through her. And she realizes, like, there's no, like, questioning. Well, let me use deduction. Let me use the scientific method. It's like, here's what it is, right? Which is really nice.
Yeah, I like that. Do you feel like her poetry evolves or grows, like, richer as she writes more and more later on in the book?
Yes. For sure.
Yeah, I didn't really think to look at that until right now when you were mentioning it.
Yeah. And I guess a few poems before that one, that's where we see all the, like, edits and revisions and blackout stuff happening. Footnotes, the footnotes that she gives 30 to after reading 30's poem. I really like that.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
That was one of my favorite ones. I didn't write it on my notes for today, but I really like that one because I was like, yeah, that sounds like something Ana Maria would do. But I mean, she even has that like confidence now to like break down 30's poem. Like you wouldn't think someone who's 13, like she just said, I want you to read my poem. She didn't say, I want you to dissect my poem or like, you know, workshop my poem. But she was like, well, what do you mean you like stop using pronouns or, you know, that kind of stuff, which I thought was really, was really interesting in her development as a poet, whether she decides to call herself that or not.
Yeah, it's such a fascinating part of the writing process and with poetry in particular is workshopping it and getting feedback. And even as maybe like an English instructor teaching this book, it's a pretty fresh element to talk about process. And you know, comparing to what Ana Maria suggests to 30's poem, I think they're pretty good suggestions too. You know, I mean, there's no rule like poetry can be what it is. You know, but there's good recommendations too on how to like maybe reach more people or cut things out that aren't necessary, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was pretty cool back to back seeing that.
Yeah. She did that a few times. So on page 114, she has a letter for Pipina. Sorry, 113. With all the references to the Wizard of Oz. And then we see her blacking out a bunch of that stuff on 114 in her second version. And then in the third version, it's just down to two lines. I'm sorry for everything. Love you, Ana Maria. It's like, I don't need all these metaphors or like references to Wizard of Oz. Like, I just have to say how I feel.
To the point.
You know, to the point. Which is also really cute.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, the first one, just as it is, it's just kind of like what we all tend to do sometimes is just like word vomit, get everything out there. And then,
yeah.
And I'm curious, you know, each version of this, is it supposed to be like what she should have done or wanted to do, or like which one would she actually give her?
Yeah, I had that question too. What do you think, Vanessa? Do you think she gave her one of those, or it was just like...
I don't think she does.
It's just kind of her trying to write out her feelings.
Yeah, I think she's just kind of letting it out. And then mm-hmm. eventually she fixes it, her friendship with Pipina.
Mm-hmm. How? What did they fight about in the meeting? Just kidding.
Number one.
Yeah. So that one where she's like questioning 30's poem that starts on 127. Where she like, it's called Strike Through, which I really like too. It's like, what does this mean? And how dare you, you know, talk about owls that way. They're magical and wise. It's not precise. I really like that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of different ways we can go with this, right?
Mm-hmm. The other ones are the poems to Chachita, to Papiringo, and to herself that start on 156. And then the last one was on 185. Those are just the ones that I wrote down, but I'm sure there's other ones.
Oh, the blackout?
Mm-hmm. Because at first on 155, she has a poem to Chachita and Papiringo, and it's just like... Again, what you were saying, Richie, just, you know, letting all those feelings out and then later switching focus to just her mom and then switching the focus again to just her dad. And then the final one is a poem to herself. Revision for her, which is the shortest poem, I think. But there's also some major changes there. I don't know. I really like it. I like... that Ana Maria is, you know, playing around with these, with form and finding different meanings in her poetry. And then I really like that the author, Alessandra, is doing that too with this character. So it's a very meta.
Oh, totally. I mean, it's kind of just one of those things. Considering the power of art to heal, because a huge thing that I think 30 is trying to do is get her to write, because 30 says she personally wasn't writing at that time, and it took a toll on her mental health, right? She was depressed and she was refusing to acknowledge it, and that's one of like the main things. I mean, that's why she has a limp, right? Because we turn out that in that version of 30 tried to hurt herself. Right. Whereas now that she's gone back in time, I guess, or she's talking to her younger self, she gives her a composition book. And that's kind of one of the things that might change that timeline for her. Right. She doesn't jump and she's working with her feelings now. She's thinking about them, writing them down. And I think that that's one of the first steps to letting her recognize that she was depressed. And that's huge. So I think that's kind of one of the big things, right? That social, sorry, that call it that, just that justice for yourself of acknowledging your feelings and the doing it through art, writing.
I know that's one way to, you know, try to approach your mental health. Of course, she also sees a therapist and there's other things and it's not going to work for everyone, right? So there's those ideas. But it's totally true how 30 was just like, you know what? I found this so much later and I wish I would have known it at your age kind of approach to it. I know you had some earlier poems, Vanessa, that stood out to you.
Yeah. I don't know which ones to talk about. I guess I'll start with Swish on page 44. So this is, I want to say this is the first stream that Ana Maria has involving a knife and hurting herself. I think it's interesting to have it be gold, like black, but it looks golden. just because it just shows like it is this dark thing that she shouldn't be, but it looks like this is what she wants to do. Mm. Yeah, just like this, I guess, I don't want to say like a glamorized view of it, but that's how kind of how she sees it in her eyes. Mm-hmm. So I like the way that color's used there.
It's also interesting the use of swish, right? Because swish you don't typically associate with a violent act. Yeah. It could have been slash. It could have been, you know, cut or, I mean, a million other words, right? But swish kind of gives it like a beautiful, like.
Yeah. Like it's going to be
delicate.
Easy.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Or swish.
It has like a, well, it has more like a onomatopoeia type.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which in that case reminds me of the earlier poem, Machetera, where she describes herself kind of like, that's how she goes through life, like with a machete in hand, cutting through, swish, swish, swish. Which, again, kind of leads up to a lot of, I mean, let's see, go back. Machetera is page 17.
That's true.
Let's see. Yeah. They already worry too much about me, their machetera daughter. I machete through life to be the best. And that's her approach, and that's putting so much on her.
Yeah.
So you can even see that manifesting in her dreams. It's a good poem too, and like now I'm reading the rest of it too.
Coming back to it, I know.
And then I also liked Mean Mother Equals Mean Daughter on page 55. So I think we're introduced to Alexa a little bit earlier, but here she's seen at the family's restaurant. Right? Yeah. And it's just interesting to see, to like know how Alexa has interacted with Ana Maria and then now seeing Alexa interacting with her own mother. Because then you get more of that background of why Alexa is the way that she is towards other girls. So I like that in the sense of developing the other characters.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I alluded to last episode is how I like how she starts to humanize a lot of these characters, like even like the bully, you know, she's the rich girl.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's obviously a lot going on behind why she acts the way she does. Right. And you see that there's also a lot of, you know, that they're all kids too, you know, they're being formed still, and like the way she's treated definitely takes that toll on Alexa. I think that's because I mean there's that kind of resolution of what loving yourself is and what that means to kind of extend to others around you. But it's all part of that emotional journey and self-understanding that I think Ana Maria goes through.
I just found the other swish swish poem on page 58. And now I'm kind of thinking of a different, because of the attention to gold, which kind of just passed the first time I read it. But when you brought it up, Vanessa, this one, she says, I look around to find its metallic stare, which is different from how she sees it in that first swish poem. But she's also, isn't she learning the periodic table? Like, I don't know if that's too much to, like, link these two, but she's thinking about, like, gold and metals and stuff like that at school, and it's kind of also finding its way in her dream. I don't know if that's
a stretch. I think it's there subconsciously for sure. That plus just the violence that is around and the threat of violence. So
for sure,
you can see how it's all culminating into these these nightmares.
Yeah, and I think the difference with this one is that it's more. Well, she writes, threatened my life. So it's like someone's
self-inflicting. It's someone's threatening her with this one.
Yeah. But also she's still contemplating it because at the end you get losing friends can make you dream that, right? So she's kind of like dealing with a sense of loneliness because of all of her friends are kind of doing their own thing and they've gotten into arguments. And so now she's like questioning her own life more so because of that. Mm.
Mm-hmm. So to continue, since you've been talking about the Swish poems, right? You have another one on 67, which is Swish and Run, which now there is that threat of a man with a knife chasing her. And that's mm-hmm. has her wake up in a cold sweat, right? But kind of more so, I want to talk about the next poem on the next page, Zipped Girl. So instead of thinking about these dreams and what's happening, she zips it up. So it's called Zip Girl. She zips it up. She locks it in. She hides it, and which we know can be kind of rough. And then this is where we have an important conversation, which you already alluded to earlier. Raina, I don't know if you want to talk about what's happening there in this poem.
I think I mentioned this last time, how at first, when she's first introduced to this term, the femicide term, and not even knowing like mm-hmm. what that is, it's on the front page, right? And then now you have to, it's not on the front page anymore, she says, but it takes only a few pages to find news about the latest femicide victim in Ciudad Juarez. So she's questioning here, you know, what does this mean? And what does it mean to be found? You know, so she's kind of putting these puzzle pieces together and seeing herself there too, as a young girl. Mm-hmm. I think you mean killed, and I'm a girl. I have to worry, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, we've already established Ana Maria as like poor, you know, 13-year-old who already has so much pressure. And her parents even say, she's so grown up, you need to be a child, you know, mm-hmm. Slow down kind of thing. But now we are adding this whole danger to her life. And she's realizing, too, that this is something that could happen to her or someone she knows, which, of course, we see later in the book. I don't know. Was there anything else?
No. I mean, just you mentioned that like, conversation, right, where even her mother's just like, don't worry about that. And
yeah.
Just really
like, we'll protect you. Yeah. We'll take care of you. And yeah, so.
And the next piece right away kind of makes it closer to home where she finds mm-hmm. out that Mr. Ye mm-hmm. had a niece that was found. Right, again, to use mm-hmm. that language of found.
Yeah. I like on page 70, Papi Ringo talks boys.
Ah, yeah.
Who we shift the, or, you know, she starts to question, why does this happen? That's the natural progression to, okay, well, there's a bunch of girls or they're being found or they're disappearing. So why is it happening? Mm. And Papi Ringo shifts the focus or the blame to boys and men. We are not all good. We are not all bad, but you have to be careful before you love one. Know him well. Let me know him too, he says. His face sweaty. Papi, I say. I smell his fear like I do the raw pork. Gracias for trying to talk to me about this, I say. Hugging his round apron belly, his guts gurgle. It's really just an interesting poem because it is kind of bringing that element to the conversation where it's like, or the shift, right? Where it's yeah, there's these found girls, these disappearing girls, but who's causing it? And so it's like, it's called femicide for a reason, right? And it's mm-hmm. always men, but they start off as boys who, I don't know, for whatever reason, commit these horrible acts. So her father kind of tries to talk about it, but what could he say, like, to a 13-year-old mm-hmm. girl?
Yeah, it's a difficult conversation. And I thought Ale did a great job of, like, conveying his discomfort mm-hmm. of trying mm-hmm. to answer that.
Yeah.
So then she goes to writing about it.
Yeah.
I pray a poem. Like, so okay, yeah. Now she's asked. She's appreciative. I'm actually going to try and work it out. And mm-hmm. this piece here, which you see is an imagistic piece, right? It's a poem and an image of a cross and a heart.
Mm-hmm. There's a poem later, I think it's called Girl, where it's the heart and the cross on the bottom. Yeah. That one's on 159. Yeah, I like this poem. And there's a couple other poems where she talks about God and La Virgen, and she's also questioning there as well. And I really like how this one ends. God, Virgen, take this poem instead. Save all of us girls. Save Ciudad Juarez. Mm. That plea at the end of the poem, with the poem as serving as a sacrifice kind of thing. Mm. That was really cool. But also showing like her desperation, like she's not really getting all these answers. She's not really understanding fully why these things are happening. She just knows that they're happening. Mm-hmm. She's writing about it, trying to figure these things out. And as most people do, like ask God for answers, right? Mm-hmm. Why, God? Why?
It kind of echoes the epigraph of her talking mm-hmm. about poetry is not justice. Doesn't give back life, mm-hmm. but she remembers and doesn't let us forget. We hear it, it's a prayer.
Yeah. She talks about that, right? And is it in one of the final poems where she talks about these girls as stories?
Hmm. Yeah, I think so. Can't.
I don't know. Well, we can get there when we get there. But
yeah, we're kind of jumping around a little bit, huh?
Yeah, we're kind of jumping around, but it just reminded me of that. And that's a good connection to the epigraph. So speaking of it hitting close to home and finding out Mr. Yeye's niece disappeared and was later found, one of Ana Maria's friends disappears too, Margarita. So I'm curious to, I mean, well, that's something we can ask Ale too about maybe what she decided to put in and what she left out, since it's a YA novel. I think it was still so profound and so heartbreaking. You know, learning about this with each passing poem, it's like, oh no. And then the next poem, oh my gosh, it's like the worst thing possible happened to one of Ana Maria's friends.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot going on there. I mean, we learned that this is one of the reasons why 30 kind of sticks around. Or not mm-hmm. sticks around, but like leaves, isn't as around, right? Mm-hmm. He has a mission. She says she has to try and save her. Mm-hmm. It's also during this moment, I think, where she's trying to, Ana Maria is trying to reconcile, because, you know, they have these little fights and they decide to have a movie night mm-hmm. where she also invites Margarita, and that's where she disappears, right? She, mm-hmm. cause they come looking for her, and it's kind of, it was a, yeah, that one was a punch in the gut.
Yeah. It really was, yeah. And then the next poem. So that's on 144, Have You Seen My Daughter? So they were going to watch The Sixth Sense, and yeah, she never got there. And so the next poem is Bullet Point Girl. And that one is, you know, more, I mean, it's the poster, one of however many posters you see of just missing girls, right? Girls who've disappeared. But this one didn't have a picture of her, right? Mm-mm. It's called Bullet Point Girl because it just has these descriptions, you know, in bullets. And if you think or look at them, it could be any girl, right? Which makes it even harder to find mm-hmm. or to distinguish.
Yeah, I like that line in there where she says, the bullet points don't help me recognize her. So how would anyone else in this city full of missing girls? Mm-hmm. Sad. That's why I really like the next poem. Because it's Ana Maria's tribute to her friend mm-hmm. who she compares to a daisy, and this one got to me, where she envisions like a life where she ran away with her crush mm-hmm. and that her sisters mm-hmm. will get to swim with her again. And And she, I mean, Margarita was always an honor roll too. So, and kind of ending with that, right? You're the only honor roll queen.
Mm-hmm. I wrote down Mother Beast as one of the poems I wanted to talk about too.
Yeah.
And it's the one right after that. So now, like, she's shifting her focus on Ciudad Juárez, right? And I really like how the poem captures, like, the conflict that she's feeling. Like, she loves her city, but she's now blaming this city. She's like, but you're mm-hmm. like my other mother, you know, but what are you known for? And, you know, it's just, it's such a heartbreaking kind of, yeah, poem, mm-hmm. questioning her love and her desperation. You can really feel it just reading this. So a lot of questions here, you know. Can you see you're lost and killed? Can you see Margarita? Does the pupil of your heart bleed for them, or are you blind? Juan Gabriel says that you're number one. At what? Your potholes, crooked streets, unmarked sewers? Is that where all the girls are? You know, you can really sense that anger mm-hmm. and desperation just for answers.
Yeah, it's heavy. Mm-hmm. The last lines, it hurts to love you. Ciudad mm-hmm. Juárez, you are a red, cruel, beautiful mother beast. Wow, yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite poems in the book.
Let's see.
Do you have any other ones in this section, Vanessa?
Well, I have a couple that are like kind of connected. And then okay. I have one that's on its own. Okay. So I kind of want to talk about Margarita's test, super trial, and then in connection to, which one was it? Oh, I Don't Care on 138. So I think it's interesting to kind of see what Ana María's expectations of herself and like what she thinks other people expect from her and like of her. So this is after Margarita invites her to come over on the weekend. So towards the end of this one, she writes, "Could it be a test to see if I'm more than a cheat? What does one wear to her trial?" And then on the next one, Super Trout, she's getting there to the house. And this one ends by saying, "There was never a Margarita test." Like, she was expecting Margarita to not actually want to be her friend again yet. She was expecting it to be like a trial run kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really interesting. And then also, so I Don't Care, I liked, because this is after Ana María gets first place for the honor roll mm-hmm. for the first time. Mm-hmm. And rather than like being excited, she feels almost guilty because she feels like she took it from Margarita. Mm-hmm. And so right before that poem, she writes, she says, "I will lose Margarita." And then afterwards on I Don't Care, her expectations are kind of shattered because instead of her being mad at her, she just gives her a high five for mm-hmm. like all of the hard work that she put into getting onto the honor roll. So I really liked those in developing Margarita's character.
Yeah, good point. And even like further, like going back to when Margarita disappears, it's like, of course, she's not going to care about any of this honor roll stuff. All the stuff she's just been worried about and late nights doing her homework and making sure. Because mm-hmm. she always wanted to be like first. And then when they finally say her name, first place, she doesn't even hear it because she's so distracted. You know, am I going to lose my friendship? Because ultimately, that's what 13-year-olds care about, like friendships and boys and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I think in I Don't Care, it really captures these other beautiful things that she really does care about mm-hmm. that are more important to her.
Yeah.
At this point anyway, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely developing her character as well of Ana María.
And then I also liked The Next Morning on page 93. So this is Ana María and Chachita interacting with one another. It's kind of, so Ana María's feeling really insecure at this point. She just tried using Nair for the first time, I guess, and didn't go the way it was supposed to, which is scary. But so in this next one, she's feeling really insecure, and her mom is really reassuring to her. Mm-hmm. But there's one moment that kind of stood out where she just assumes that this is what moms do. This is what you're supposed to say because you gave birth to me, kind of thing. And I like how on the next page, on 94, where the poem continues, her mom kind of just shows her the same kind of flaws on herself, and then asks her, "Do you think I'm ugly?" So I really like how this one kind of ends with reemphasizing that she is alive, she's healthy, she's smart, she's beautiful, and that the way that her body is changing and the way that she looks doesn't make her ugly. So I really like this one for that reason.
And how she ends it, better to be a bit bansona and hairy than pushing daisies, mm-hmm. which is foreshadowing now that we finished the book, but also like very cool way to end the poem.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any, Richie, that you want to look at?
Yeah, I'm trying to.
Other ones, I mean.
I can say, but yeah. I mean, I have one. I thought it was interesting on around 182. I went looking for. And it's after the one you referenced, What Loving You Is. Do you want to talk about that one first? Because, I mean, there's been a lot of a journey here and of, again, introspection, self-love, considering more about her friends, expanding her friend circle, right? And you have What Loving You Is, which you had alluded to earlier.
I mean, I didn't have a lot of notes on this one other than just, you know, how we're getting closer to the end of the book, and it's the progression that we see between Ana Maria and 30 and their relationship, and Ana Maria feeling comfortable with herself at this point. Yeah. So it was mostly just that, like how this served as a resolution and how it was kind of like beautifully written.
Yeah.
More poetic than the other stuff. There's no like strike throughs, there's no blackouts here. It's just, you know. And at the end, you know, her question, "I know what loving you is, do you?"
She's like proud, directing wants to glow. She wants to glow to 30. Like,
yeah, she's directing it at her, which is really cool too.
Which is why, and then I like the next one, which is she's looking for her, but doesn't find 30. Because at this point, 30 disappears. But I like this point in the bottom of the piece where she emphasized, and I, you know, I feel like this is author talking to reader, especially, you know, thinking of her audience. "No girl should wait for her own 30 to arrive. She might not come." And of course, so she's thinking about her friends, Pipina, Priscilla, even Alexa, right? Because she had these moments with Alexa where she ran into her into the bathroom crying, and it's a new moment for them. 30's weird love to them without being that weird. She wants to like, how can I talk that love without being that weird? And it's just, I think about that personality of, so I thought it was a nice compendium to that.
It's also a nice callback. So this was the other one that is a callback to one of the first poems, or the first poem.
Yeah, the first
which
one.
Which is, "I wasn't looking for her." And this one is, "I went looking for her." Right. So we have those kind of mirroring, the ones that you were talking about, Richie. What loving you could be, what loving you is not, what loving you is.
Yeah. I mean, I think the one after the one I just read, Help, on 183, is where she decides to ask for that, right? Help to ask and have that conversation, even though it's difficult, right? She asks him. She, you know, just before that, she sees an iridescent Margarita playing hide and seek around the cars, right? Kind of like this image of almost ghostly, right? And it's like forces are like to make that leap, so to speak, right? To mention it. Mm-hmm. And then it all comes winding, and so it's all wrapping up so quickly here, right? Right. Trying to also reconcile now, again, the love for Wattis, right?
And then, well, unless we have something else before, like that last letter that she finds. Mm-hmm. And even the author's notes, I think, go back to what you were saying, Richie, about 30 and Ale trying to get to the reader, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if this is you, ask for help. Mm-hmm. If you resonate with any of this, you're not alone. Mm-hmm. You know, that don't wait for your 30 to come. If any of this sounds familiar, you know, mm-hmm. try this out. You know, so mm-hmm. I kind of like how the notes help reinforce a lot of what we're already talking about and thinking with this character. But then that letter, you know, which is different from everything else in the book, mm-hmm. right? I mean, because there's poems that Ana Maria writes for her friends and her parents and to herself. So there's a little bit of that kind of dialogue, but we have this letter from 30, kind of just telling her, here's what's in store, or what happened to me at age 15, at 18, 20, mm-hmm. 24. But mm-hmm. because of that butterfly effect that she talked about earlier, doesn't have to be your experience, right? And here's what I did to get help, was a little bit later, which is why I'm letting you know now that you can ask for help. All you have to do is tell Chachita and Papiringo that you're depressed, you know, for example, or to start. Mm-hmm. There's no shame in that, right?
Yeah.
So I really like that. Mm. And even though this is like the actual letter from the book, I feel like this whole thing is like that love letter that we were talking about, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Between these two.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. Looking at the letter right now, I mean, you talked about that conversation with Papiringo about boys, and I like mm-hmm. how she kind of addresses here at the bottom of 189, right? At 2024, love. And, you know, she talked about becoming a Grinch and only loved handsome, unreachable pixels like Brad Pitt. And my favorite is this part, right? Then I saw a little boy fall. He was told, don't cry, get up. I recognized this boy inside the men I had loved, right? Kind of thinking about kind of the societal.
Toxic kind of masculinity.
Thing. Exactly, mm-hmm. right? You're not mm-hmm. allowed to cry, not about to have your emotions, and that how that kind of stunts it, emotional growth or mm-hmm. yeah, emotional intelligence. And seeing how that affects the relationships. And then I love how she talks about her love, right, that she finds. The boy inside him had cried until his heart overflowed. That was a pretty beautiful moment. There's a lot here, right?
Yeah.
In the letter.
Yeah, those realizations at 25 and to 29, Chachita and Papiringo were just human. All these years, had they fed me lies with a glass of milk to wash them down? So you always think that they're invincible or that they know everything. Yeah. And sometimes they tell you they know everything and that they're always right, you know? So there's that. Mm-hmm. And so she's like, didn't realize it until she was in her 20s, late 20s, mm-hmm. you know, talking about their humanity and mm-hmm. they were only trying to do right by her. So yeah, it's very sweet.
Yeah, so that's right to mention in part one, like, just you, the more you grow up, you learn, like, damn, we didn't really have it figured it out, you know? We're still working it out. And
so lost.
That's kind of where she ends off on, too, right? Where she's at 30. And mm-hmm. There's still a lot going on, right? It's not perfect, but she learns to savor these moments of mm-hmm. what she enjoys and then get to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So by the end of the book, do we feel like we've reconciled some of this, these feelings, or do we still feel a little lost? I feel a little bit better finished this book.
I would say so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's wrapped up kind of nice in that way, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's more of an acceptance.
Acceptance, mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't say, I mean, it does kind of end on a positive note, even though there's still all these like lurking emotions mm-hmm. and danger and stuff that we're not dismissing at all or forgetting about at all. But it's like these little things one day at a time, right? Yeah.
It's a really good reminder, you know. Mm-hmm. Could always use that time and time again. Oh, so we're looking forward to talking to her next episode. And have you guys thought about questions to ask?
Already? A couple of questions. Yeah. Oh, I forgot. Another thing we were supposed to discuss was how we could use this in the classroom, Richie. how would you use this book in the classroom, other than stuff we've already
done? Right, yeah, because we had alluded to quite a bit. So if you're a teacher, I just think it's new, it's relevant, and I think that if you're in El Paso, one of the best things is you can just invite the author to talk to students, and that in itself is you might not even know could be motivating someone, right? So much as a kid. And again, just because of the discussions on mental health and not being too hard on yourself, it's very easy to get caught up in these things with school. And when you're in middle school, high school, there's just so much going on in your lives, you know, and the things that you think are the most important, like world-ending things, you know, it's helpful to realize that there's more to that. There's more to life than that. And I think as students, it's helpful to read. And I just hope that, you know, maybe people do pick this up for their classrooms and can share that. Because I think there are still a lot of lessons to bring out. And I think the kids would like it. I think students would enjoy reading it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Do you think middle school or high school?
High school.
I would say high school too.
Yeah.
I think it'd be good to introduce to middle schoolers, but I think high schoolers would understand a lot more thematically and be able to have these harder conversations than middle schoolers might.
I think in the middle school context, it could work if, like, I don't know if these are a thing, but like there's a like a book club or something, like a reading club or a book club.
Mm-hmm.
That would be cool to introduce to like that group of students. I think they would accept it a little bit more readily.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, I don't know, like, again, when it comes to like schools and like public, like what's allowed and all that,
right.
It gets tricky because, you know, like you keep reading on the news, or I always see stories about how parents are complaining about what's being taught, you know, how dare they bring up sex, how dare they bring up femicides. Kind of like here where they just try and avoid the femicides, like it's not a thing, right? It's also that, like, it's important topics that should be talked about, but it makes people uncomfortable, and then so they don't want that to be taught in the schools. So I think that'd be an interesting conversation to have with Ale next week. You know, the genre of YA and in schools, you know, and just in general. Like, I think we talked about like maybe some of the difficulties of what you have to leave out, or you know, what you have to leave in. I don't know. What do you think, Vanessa?
What do you think, Vanessa?
That was dirty.
What? Hey, she called it.
I know, I did.
I'm not an educator yet, so I don't.
As a future educator. How would you bring this into the classroom? Or would you even bring it into the classroom?
I think I would. I would like to see it used to help students with like writing exercises, just to see like the editing of like blacking out and like taking out from everything that you write. Like, absolutely, you should write everything that you're feeling and have it get it all out, but then kind of step back and like take out some stuff and like sweeten it, like bring it together.
Oh, it'd be great to introduce like a journal. type assignment.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of creative writing techniques too, mm-hmm. you know, like you could talk about. Because we didn't get too much on the technical, not too much, too much.
Yeah.
But we talked about some of the form.
Even like visual poetry, you can do just one class or write about whatever you want, but you have to draw a picture around it and it has to relate to the content.
Mm-hmm.
That's always a fun one with the younger kids.
Yeah. That's what I learned. I mentioned how Alessandra and I both worked with the Boys and Girls Club. And mm-hmm. one of the things we realized right away is that we had to kind of adapt our initial lessons for younger kids. And they really did like imagistic stuff, mm-hmm. you know. And Alessandra was so much more like organized than I was. And she had like PowerPoints and charts. And it was really motivating, you know, and to see her story here mm-hmm. and what's happening. I'm like, okay, yeah, I love it. It feels right.
Cool.
All right.
I'm excited to talk to her. So part three will be our interview. So we'll have some questions for sure.
So tune in and join us. Make sure to bring your maranitos and cafecito. We'll have a nice convo with the author.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Literally Literary, brought to you by Border Senses and Power at the Pass. This episode, we continued our discussion on 30 Talks Weird Love by Alessandra Narvaez Varela. Join us on our next episode where Alessandra will be featured as our guest. If you haven't read it, we hope we inspire you to pick up a copy. Follow us on Instagram at literallyliterary.ep and on Twitter at literallylitep.